now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney. Joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, Sailor of Means, Sachs. Ethan, I see a new locale. I see some new art on the wall behind you. I see a lowdown poster. You're in the new house. You made the move.
New house. They carpeted the office 2 days ago, which was a great relief to me. I feel like Jen and I have been debriefing. I was simultaneously, I think, very helpful, but balanced that this week by being extremely annoying because I don't really like to let tasks linger. And so like, so I would be like texting Jen and be like, I did this and this and this. She'd be like, oh my God, that's so helpful. And I'd be like, okay. And then what are we doing about this? And what are we doing about this? And she's like, I'm going to murder you. Like, just relax and chill. And so once the office got carpeted and I could start to like move that stuff in here.
And then that's your stuff. You don't have to relay to her. Like
yeah. My stuff, I can just do it. And like, also I'm just, you know, in our old house, my office was / our guest room / like the room you had to go through to get to our third floor where our bedroom was. And so like, but now it's just a little office closet thing. And like, no one ever has to come in here. Jonah never needs to come in and mess with anything. It's just my space.
Your man cave, your man cave.
Man there cave. You go. That's right.
Your man corner.
Yeah. So here we are. Yes, and I am happy to have my Sailor of Means and my balance art, courtesy of you, yours truly. So I'm happy to have those behind me again. Yeah.
Yeah.
And here we are. And here I shall be for the remainder of my podcasting days.
This is the white wall you're going to look at. Is the color of the wall ever changing? Is it staying white?
I don't know. Yeah. Someone was like, oh, are you going to like get a green screen behind you? I was like, I don't know. I don't know if do we live that life anymore? Also, I think you can just chroma key out white backgrounds anyway, but I guess not with the white shirt that I'm wearing currently.
Definitely not with the white shirt. The screen is very bright this morning.
I wouldn't do that. So I don't know. But the painting is another step, not immediately, but down the road. Today will be the final unpacking blitz, and then I think we'll be, you know, 95% of the way there, which is great.
In the stage where is that thing? Do you know where this thing is? And then yes, that's going to be your life for the next 6 months.
I came downstairs the other day and I was like muttering to myself about something that I was like, aha, there it is. And Jen was like, that is like the most dad thing you've ever done. Just like muttering about where's that tool I left? And then, aha, there it is. I was like, yep, here I am. Here
it's
I
coming
am.
For
my
you.
My late 30s, definitely entering my dad era. I see your balance art on the wall behind you as well.
It's always going to be there, baby.
There
love
it is.
That art. I have totally random aside, but I also, so this balance art came along with a blitz of other like art print purchases the first time we were at Vegas with the podcast. Mm. And I purchased the other art of balance, which is like the angel with the like also holding equilibrium
scales.
Tables.
Yeah.
But kind of like the old magic art that would have gotten you in trouble at recess. Like this angel is fairly scantily clad. Mm-hmm. And I have it in my room where I teach clarinet and saxophone class at the middle school. And I don't know when this happened, but about a month ago, I saw somebody had taken 2 post-it notes and put them over the angel's breasts. So I've just left them there because it really makes me laugh every time I look at it.
That's very funny. That's very
funny. Some middle school kid thought it was a little too much. I don't know.
Maybe it was a teacher. Who knows?
No, nobody else is in that room but me.
That's your man cave.
It's definitely middle school humor.
I like it. You'll notice we're maybe riffing a little bit more than usual. And that's because I think we need to talk about the state of Strixhaven and potentially the state of limited magic. We got a disturbing message from our dear friend Jay Maz, former PT competitor and guest of our Lords Unlimited podcast and runner of the LOL Achievement Hunt, which I got one. Also, Jay Maz, if you're listening, I don't see myself reflected as the current leader for Big Mad. I had a deck with four Ancestral Angers, and I got the four, and I believe four is the record now. So I would like to see Lord Tupperware eligible for a winning achievement. But anyway, he messaged us something from the preview panel about Reality Fracture that only showed five allied color pairs. Are we led to believe that Reality Fracture will be another guild set, Ben?
I hope not. Like this run of three guild sets has about crushed my magic spirit. Guild sets are significantly less good. Like, I don't know, whatever they are, they're like two-thirds of a normal magic set or something. Like, it is significantly less space to explore.
There's just, yeah, they're just a different class, I feel like. Like, of guild sets, like, I liked Lorwyn Eclipsed. I might even say, though I'm not sure I will say that I like Secrets of Strixhaven, but I have actually fond memories of OG Strixhaven. I have very fond memories of Ravnica Allegiance. But I would put guild sets in just a different category of sets.
Well, and all of those sets, for the most part, that you named were interspersed in the middle of many other 10 color pair sets. It wasn't like boom, boom, boom. The only one that's been boom, boom was Guilds of Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance.
Right.
And we're already on boom, boom, boom with guild sets.
Correct. Yeah. With Lorwyn Eclipsed, Turtles, which we largely bowed out of, and perhaps wrongly so. And now this. And then we've got Marvel coming up, but one that is awkwardly spaced in the Paternity Leave Chronicles that we'll be doing for June, or for July, rather. But also, we're going to have the like Marvel Omen Paths thing, which is just... It doesn't mean that a set won't have 10 full color pairs and be good and draftable, but it does make content awkward. It
makes content really awkward. We're just going to start with the Omen Pass names, right? We have to.
I think so, from jump. And then we've got Hobbit after that, which is a small set. So I assume that will be also only five color pairs.
Black.
Watsy, black. 3-4 pest. Coming at you. That's the mood this Saturday, Sunday morning. But we're going to shake it off because we do have stuff to talk about. We've talked about soup. Soup is the buzzword of the past few weeks. Certainly coming off the heels of the Pro Tour and seeing people with their Snarl songs and their Potioner's Trove. And we also dug into that early in the podcasting. And I think we got to look at the other side of the coin. What else is out there to combat those soup decks? And one of my gripes with this format is I'm not sure that the tools are ultimately there to do so in a consistent fashion, but you can do it. And I think we're going to outline how best to do it this week. But I did sort of want to get out a little disclaimer about, we just got a sort of a state of the limited world. I feel like we're generally positive people on this show, and it's weighing us down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Magic, and I love Magic Draft more than just about anything. And this has been a rough go, and I hope that this is not the future of limited Magic year in and year out. The clearest way to state what I hope is that I hope that they're not selling out fully fleshed out 10 color pair sets for more small sets more frequently or more guild sets more frequently. I hope that guild sets is not their solution to, well, now Hasbro is asking us to pump out seven sets a year or whatever.
But that is my fear. 2026 has certainly pointed to that being the case.
Yes, I agree.
So we'll see. That's it. Doom and gloom over. Though I guess not quite, because we still have to talk about Secrets of Strixhaven. But doom and gloom.
Wow. Secrets of Strixhaven. Taking a stray there. You said we were still largely positive about Strixhaven.
No strays. I'm going to be pointing my crosshairs right at it in just a little bit. But I want to turn the conversation positive and talk about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/LordsLimited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Some great perks over at the Patreon. One is access to our Discord, which is just a great community of like-minded individuals. We're also doing our streams to Discord, which anybody who is present to those or present in the Discord has access to. We're also doing gameplay review videos. Dropped one of those already. We'll be dropping another one either this week or next week, but I kind of feel like I need to get it out this week because the submissions are coming, which is awesome. Love to see that. So that's a great thing. At baseline, everybody gets access to all that stuff. And then if you move up the reward tier rankings, you get access to this episode a day early, ad-free, and also access to our bonus weekly podcast of Lords Unlimited. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, please head on over to the Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. So this week we're welcoming Bill, Jason, Noah, and William. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough.
So the guild set of it all is not quite what I have an issue with Secrets of Strixhaven, though it's part of it. But I will say one of, like, the thing that I really like about the format is, and I have a draft log like this a little later on, those drafts where you, like, scrap your first, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 picks because you read the signals properly, and then you just get rewarded handsomely, that is a dopamine hit like no other. Like, that is what I, like, come to this game for. And Secrets of Strixhaven has the ability to provide that in spades, like, more so than a 10-color pair format, because you just get hit over the head with, like, oh my god, I got this card, pick 14. Could this lane be any wide opener, you know? Like,
yep.
So that's great. I like that about the format. That's kind of where I stop a little bit. I have the comparison to Chromatic Cube as Retail Limited. Like, the amount of over the top, the amount of big game stuff that this format provides in redundancy is what I feel like is ultimately a knock against it. Like, it was cool. We were so hyped on Wisdom of Ages or whatever. Is that, that's a card? That's the 7-mana thing that gets back all the spells and you have no maximum hand size? Like, there's that. I like Divergent Equation, which is like Wisdom of Ages at home. But, like, there's just so many 6-mana, 7-mana, you don't win immediately, but you're going to win in 5 turns kind of cards that kind of feel demoralizing to play against.
You and I weren't fans of LCI because of how far it shoved the curve low. Like, this is kind of the opposite end of the spectrum of LCI. So, like, yes, Wizards heard, we don't want aggro, but we also don't want this. We just want balanced, good, limited formats where you can play aggro, mid-range, and control. Give us more Duskmourns, please.
Yeah, yeah. Man, Duskmourn was just so great. Duskmourn was great. I thought Avatar The Last Airbender was great. Many people thought Final Fantasy was great. Like, they can do it, and they have done it in recent years. I just feel like the balance is slightly off with balance in the background of both of our images now. I just think the balance is slightly off here. With the redundancy of the, like, over-the-top stuff, that does seem to shove, and that coupled with, I think, a couple pretty punishing things for aggro to succeed in the format, which is why, like, when I were brainstorming at the beginning of the week, like, what are we going to talk about? And it seems like we should check in on what's at the other end of the spectrum from these big game soup decks. I was like, all right, we'll talk about aggro. And then as I was digging into it, I was like, it's not really aggro. Like, mid-range is the new aggro. And LCI and Phyrexia All Be One came to mind as, like, sets that were true, like, 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, like, low curve, pushing damage, almost like constructed levels of consistency and ending the game early. You just don't have that in Secrets of Strixhaven.
I mean, you do if you have Elite Interceptors. I mean, Elite Interceptor is an insane 1-drop. That keeps your opponent off balance, etc.
That is such an interesting card in the context of what we're talking about, because I agree, that card is an excellent card, but I feel like that's a poster child for, it's not aggro, it's mid-range, because it's a 1-drop with 1 power, not 2, and its value or its power comes from the fact that it draws you a card. And now, what does it do while it's drawing you a card? Maybe it is almost never untapping a thing, but it's almost always tap a thing, which triggers a repartee thing, which allows you to push some damage, but it itself is not, like, an inherently aggressive card. You know what I mean?
I agree, except it gets you on board early on turn one, but it's not the thing that you're talking about where it's like 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop. It's playing a curve of premium creatures and then disrupting your opponent. Like Elite Interceptor is basically, I think, the only one drop you want to play in the format at common, certainly. The Barak Banemaker can do some work in black in the Silver Quill X.
I'm forgetting the name of it, but the black uncommon 1/1 that has repartee get a counter. That's also like, I think, great in Silver Quill decks, but can be preyed upon by a lot of the things. You know, the go tall nature of the format gets preyed upon by there's a good bit of bounce running around there. Like blue, I think, doesn't get to play in this mid range space that we're talking about most of the time. Like I think blue largely just exists as the top end late game boogeyman of the format. And the other three non-blue color pairs get to tussle for, hey, can I do a mid-range thing that maybe keeps these decks in check in some respect? But yeah, Elite Interceptor is so interesting as like a card that does double duty of like, yes, it's aggressive, but it's aggressive and value. You know, we were joking, whatever, 2 weeks ago about how is Pursue the Past the number one common. And actually, it has been unseated by Elite Interceptor. You'll be happy to know. But
not among top players. I just looked at the data before we started recording.
Pursue the Past is still. But digging into the mid-range of it all, finally I was like, oh, and now I get why Pursue the Past is so good. Is because it allows it gives these decks an ability to grind into the late game with a little bit of synergy. If you're doing the Leaves the Graveyard thing, you are ultimately up a card once you flash it back. Like, it does what a lot of these decks are trying to do as they go toe-to-toe with the big game or the late game decks of the format. We've got the title of the show is Midrange is the New Aggro. So I think we should start by talking about what midrange, how we're going to define it, because I feel like midrange, much like tempo or whatever, are elusive terms. But in the world of Secrets of Strixhaven, I am meaning cards that affect the board but also generate value. So Elite Interceptor is a poster child for that descriptor. I think the rules of engagement of this format, and or not the rules of engagement, but sort of the just what exists in the format, life gain being a theme, and a redundancy of cheap red removal. So we've got Impractical Joke, Tome Blast, Abrade, Burst Lightning. That even once you get to three mana, Unsubtle Mockery, but I wouldn't call that like that's not the most preying upon cheap things. But the fact that you have those two things makes aggro in a pure classic sense, I think, pretty tough to get the job done.
Yeah, there's just a redundancy of win the late game effects, and there's also a redundancy of let's not lose in the early game if you're playing red, certainly.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I think blue-red probably the main culprit and the best home for these late game decks, but blue-green soup also. So, but those blue-green soup decks, if your mana is good enough, you're probably splashing some amount of that cheap red removal anyway. And maybe you're not deploying it on turn two, but you still have it for double spelling later on, which is very important.
Like on the flip side of that, you could say one of the things we're going to talk about is keeping your opponent off balance. And all that red removal can be used great in Lorehold to keep your opponent off balance with their early plays as well and push damage. I just think it's more hostile to the aggro decks than it is friendly to the aggro decks, ultimately.
I think so. Well, because if those aggro decks are planning to employ an Impractical Joke or a Tome Blast in a leveraged sense, sometimes those blue decks don't comply.
Don't even play a creature, yeah.
Right, they're not playing something to the board.
Those are the worst when you have the cheap red burn spells stranded in your hand.
Well, and I think it's not only the worst when you're the aggressor, but it's also, and we'll talk about that when we get to keeping your opponent off balance, it's also part of how you can start to think about these mid-range decks in a way that directly reflects what those late game decks are trying to do. Like it's sort of a leveling war of like, I know that you're doing this, so I'm going to try and do this. And Tome Blast is a big one because we're going to talk about like two toughness things that can't get out of range of that are kind of big no-nos for me if you're trying to play this mid-range game, because if you play into the Tome Blast, they just get to do exactly what they want. If you play a Kirol or some other three toughness thing on turn two and your opponent's staring at their Tome Blast, you really get, like, I've been on the receiving end of that where I'm like, I'm ready to snipe off your two drop or whatever, and that's your play. All of a sudden, your whole game plan shifts a little bit. And that's the kind of thing you need to do to get ahead of those decks.
Yes, I agree.
So yeah, I don't think that curving out like 2, 3, 4 backed up by removal and tricks in that classic sense is the way to do it in this format, because the control decks just have too many ways to keep pace with you. I think the job as the assertive player is to nullify as many of the cheap plays your opponent is hoping to deploy as possible. You want to keep pace with them in the value department as much as you can, which is also not super intuitive. Like, usually in your aggressive decks, you would never think about running a card draw spell, but I do think you want to be packing card advantage in that way. And we'll talk about which ones I think are good. And we're going to talk about keeping them off balance. So the turns where they want to cast their powerful spells, right? The turns where they're like, I would like to tap out for 7 mana to play my Wisdom of Ages or to get back 3 spells with Divergent Equation, that those are the turns where you can punish them to the max.
I agree with all that. I think, and this is just a bigger issue in the format, which is that Snarlsong is there. Like, if Snarlsong mm-hmm. weren't in the format, like, it would be so much more of a fair game for the aggro decks, because that's like when they tap out for Snarlsong, then you're like, well, crap, and then they have the time to tap out for Wisdom of the Ages. But if you can dodge Snarlsong, I think certainly possible to set up turns like you're talking about, where you're ready to crack in, or you can even prevent them from being able to cast that spell.
Right. To be clear, I think if you tell me, yeah, look, you have to play Secrets of Strixhaven for your life, but you get to sit down and pick what kind of deck is going to be open for you, I'm going to ask for a blue-red late-game deck with, like, with the cheap removal, with the card draw, with the late-game powerhouses. But you don't always get that. And so I feel like this is a tool in your toolbox to have when red-white, black-green are open for your seat. And I think, you know, black-green is a great example of, like, I don't think you're necessarily steering away from the life gain synergies, but like Bogwater Lumeret is not a card that excites me in black green. Will I play it? Yes, but it's not like how I'm thinking about drafting that deck to maximize its effectiveness.
But I think to your theoretical question there, I think past blue red, I'd almost want to play Lorehold or Silverquill if you were getting premium versions of the decks, more than 3 to 5 color soup or whatever.
Yes. Well, I mean, that holds true. That holds true set after set. Like, 2-color decks are going to be better than 2 colors and a splash, or full 3 colors, or full 5-color soup, whatever, just for consistency's sake.
Sure.
So I agree with that I would rather, but of the, you know, you're not saying, and I'd like to be Witherbloom or Quandrix. Like, no, I would still largely leave those in a tier below the 2 white aggressive decks, because I think white provides the best ways to keep your opponent off balance in the ways we're talking.
For sure.
Okay, so those 3 categories of things, nullify their cheap plays, sort of alluded to this already. I'm trying to not play 2 toughness creatures that can't grow, especially if they cost 3 or more mana. So some ways to think about cards that can tussle in that way, like Mindful Biomancer is the 1 and a green, 2/2, when it comes in, you gain a life and it has 2 and a green, pump it, +2/+2 once a turn. That, I think, meets the criteria for me.
Barely,
but barely. Does. Like, you can respond to an instant speed or sorcery speed removal spell with the pump. Scolding Administrator is the white-black 2/2 uncommon that has menace and can grow. That meets the criteria. Yes, it starts as a 2/2, but it gets out of range.
I'm going to push back against Mindful Biomancer a little bit, I think.
Okay,
because
that's fine.
You're either, like, If you can pump it, you're pumping it main phase, and then you're tapped out, or you've played something main phase and you're tapped out.
You'll get no pushback from me. Scolding Administrator, or Mindful Biomancer is off the list. Scolding Administrator's on. Spirit Mascot can grow as the game progresses. Lecturing Scorn Mage, that's the black 1-drop that grows with Repartee triggers. Expressive Fire Dancer, I guess, is in the same category as Mindful Biomancer.
I don't think so. I think Expressive Fire Dancer is premium in the format.
Well, the fact that it has this ability to do such a huge burst of damage, right? When it gets to, when you do the Opus trigger for 5 and you get it as a 3/3 double striker, it's really big game from your common 2-drop.
But thinking about it as dodging Tome Blast, I think it's more 2-drops, and certainly you want your 2-drops to be able to dodge Tome Blast, but it's more 2-drops that are relevant in the late game as well. An expressive fire dancer is certainly that.
Yes. And I mean, and mindful biomancer, just barely, I would say.
Just barely. So maybe if we're thinking about it in that context, it can stay on the list.
Yeah, so it's not, well, and some of these then fall off if we're thinking about two drops that are also good on turn six, like Lecturing Scorn Mage, the one mana 1/1 with Repartee, it gets a counter, like that's going to be less good the longer the game, or the later in the game you draw it.
Well, but it can grow out of range of a Tome Blast quickly, and also it's just so efficient.
Yes. Well, but there's a double-edged sword, because my next point is word of caution around going tall too much in the format, because there is a good bit of bounce floating around. And I think Fractals, it's one of the reasons that I don't love the green decks in this assertive space, is because a lot of the power they get is from big fractals, and those things are just really easily disruptible by a number of tools in the format. Not saying that, like, I'm not fist pumping when I've got my Scolding Administrator up to a 5/5 menace that's going to dump its counters, but if it gets bounced or exiled, it's big sad.
Yeah.
Three toughness, two drops I alluded to, like Kirol or Infirmary Healer, that's the one in a green 2/3 that comes along with Stream of Life. They can be annoying for these decks. And on the flip side, Bogwater Lumeret, Inkling Mascot, the 2/2 with Repartee gets flying and you surveil one. Melancholic Poet, Repartee drain one. Shattered Acolyte, the 2/2 lifelink. Stone Docent, the 3/1 that you can exile from your yard. These are tougher sells. I'm not saying they're unplayable and I'm never putting them on my decks. Like, I definitely am. But you run the risk of opening yourself up to playing into the hands of those decks early stage game plans.
Yeah. Of that list of tougher sell cards, which ones do you like more than the others? Because I've been playing more of the soup side than the mid-range aggro side lately. And well, I think, honestly, the creature that scares me the most off that list is Stone Docent. Just because it's got 3 power. Like, on my bad draws, like, it pressures me harder than the other ones.
Yes.
Like, in a sea of bad options, I'd almost rather have the one that has 3 power.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was more curious. You're like, well, I've been playing primarily soup decks. I'd be like, I feel like then you have line of sight better than me, potentially, of what do you not want to see on the other side of the battlefield. I agree. I think the other one for my money would be Inkling Mascot, just because of evasion. And Shattered Acolyte, I like, but not really against the soup decks. I just like having main deck artifact enchantment hate, you know, being able to snipe off an Arc of Hunger, but that's not a great buyout for my 2/2 that's going to die to Tome Blast.
Right. Well, the other thing Inkling Mascot does is it fails in this category of nullify their cheap plays, but it does help in the next category, which is keep pace in the value department with the Surveil 1 triggers. That's where it really excels, I think.
Correct. The last thing before we get to the value department or a bridge to that is to talk about value creatures as being a great way to mitigate the removal spells. Like, no one wants to Tome Blast your Elite Interceptor after it's fired off the prepared spell. No one wants to kill, though you have to kill, Strixhaven Skycoach, the 3/2 vehicle that finds a land. No one wants to Tome Blast an Environmental Scientist because you already got your land. But like, when you have those upfront 2-for-1s, it does make it less appealing to fire off a kill spell on it.
Can we talk about Strixhaven Skycoach for a second? Because you're high on this card, correct?
I'm very high on this card, yeah.
Yeah, I like have been aware that you're high on the cards. I've played it this past week.
Uh-huh.
I think I have just set the card up to fail somehow. Like, because the creature counts in this format are generally lower. Like, you're generally in the 10 to 13 creature count range. And Strixhaven Skycoach just has been bad for me in that type of deck. So are you supposed to not? Like, it's good in soup, right? Or where is it good?
I think it's
talk to me about this card.
I'm assuming it's not good in soup because that's where your creature count is at its lowest.
I agree, but so you're just playing it as a 3/2 flyer that draws you a land.
For sure.
And so it's you're playing it more in white, black, and white, red.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm always playing this card, but I think it is at its best. And just because, like, I'm picking it very highly because of the things it lets you do in this format. Like, I never want to miss land drops. I'm going to be splashing. I really like this card. I think that, but if your creature count is 10, yeah, it's much worse than when your creature count is 15.
But how often is your creature count 15 in this format? I would say almost never for me.
That's because you're not drafting these decks that much.
I did a bunch the first weeks, and some of them are. I did a bunch the first week and a half, and some of them were 15 creature counts, but some of the good pressure decks are still like 10 to 13 creatures.
You're counting like group project, the 2/2 token as a creature in this sense.
I think it's a me problem with Strixhaven Sky Coach. I understand it better. Thank you for that aside.
You're very welcome. So this brings us to the second point, or the second way that you can combat or try and keep pace with these decks, which is to keep pace in the value department. This again was triggered by my love last week of Cost of Brilliance, the 2 and a black, draw 2, lose 2, put a counter on something. But that is like the poster child for this element of the strategy, right? Like, unlike aggro decks of the past, where you would think about card advantage as I killed my opponent and they had 3 or 4 cards left in their hand. That's my card advantage. You're really trying to keep pace with, like, okay, I know you're going to be drawing cards or getting velocity. I need to keep pace in some respect too. So, yeah.
Well, even more than the straining cards, and even more than keeping pace seems like an impossible goal. It's more making sure that you don't ever run out of gas, right?
Yes.
Like that, it's just don't run out of gas.
Yes. Because, and I think I first got clued into this by being on the other side of the battlefield, by being the late game decks and being like, I think I'm close to stable. I think I'm ready to turn the corner. And then they'd cast a Cost of Brilliance. They're getting 2 extra cards. They're triggering some repartee. And that felt like I was almost around the corner, and then the door slammed in my face.
Blech.
Blech. And I think that's, if you can get your late game opponents to that feeling by being like, I'm impacting the board, but I'm also not running out of stuff to do, that's huge. And that's where things like Elite Interceptor just, again, cannot sing its praises enough. Environmental Scientist, Strixhaven Sky Coach, Group Project, make a 2/2 token, get a 2/2 token for flashback for free. Primary Research and other Leave the Graveyard triggers stuff, but I think Primary Research is great here in that case, the 4 and a white enchantment that gets back a 3 or less drop, and then in your end step, if something left your yard, you draw a card.
Yeah, because it's exactly what you're describing. It affects the board and makes it to where you're likely to never run out of gas. And the Control X game plan is, I want you to stop playing threats at some point so that I can stabilize and turn the corner. And Primary Research makes it so you keep playing threat.
Yeah. Poisoner's Apprentice, not necessarily great against the big soup decks, but if you're ever in the mid-range mirror, which I think you will be a fair amount of the time, Poisoner's Apprentice is excellent. That's the 2 and a black, 2/2. It has an infusion trigger, give a thing -4/-4. And then the format is just chock full of various prepared spells that, like, help you keep the gas flowing in some respects. I give you I get another repartee trigger if I'm firing off this thing, you know? So you want to keep that in mind. Like, the more you can pack your deck full of things that meet this criteria, the better off you're going to be.
Well, I think one of the cards that we've poo-pooed a little bit in the last week or two is Stirring Honormancer. That's the Silver Quill 4/5 that lets you look at the top cards of your library and pick one and put it in your hand. That, I think, if you're playing this kind of strategy where you're trying to be maybe a skosh slower, that puts something on the board that your opponent has to tussle with and draws you a card. Is it always great? No, but I certainly think if you're building this style of deck, you're never cutting it.
Correct. Well, I think there are some clunky commons, uncommons that kind of overperform here. Like, again, you're not hoping to run these, but if you're looking for what am I going to comprise this deck of, things like Tenured Concoctor, that's the green 4/5 with vigilance, infusion, it gets +2/+0. But more importantly, if they target it,
you draw a card, gas keeps flowing.
Cheerful Osteomancer, the black 4/2, the 4-mana 4/2 with prepared spell of Raise Dead. Like, that's a value 5-drop for you in this deck. Yes, yeah, it died. This commits the egregious sin of being a 4-mana play that dies to Tome Blast. But otherwise, like, these cards have homes, and I think it's here. And yeah, I agree. It's worth shouting out Honor Mancer as, like, we've been poo-pooing it. But that's when I hadn't quite shifted my view of Silver Quill to, I think it's mid-range, rather than, like, I'm just trying to get you dead as quick as possible. I just don't think you can get people dead as quick as possible in this format.
Well, but another thing that happens when you're building your decks like this, if it's what we're subscribing to here, which is these three key points of nullify their cheap plays, keep pace in the value department, keep them off balance. If you're subscribing to that, you also randomly get draws where you do just kill them dead. Like you play two drop, you play a three drop, and then you play something like Render Speechless, which is the two white black target opponent reveals their hand. You take a card, put +1/+1 counters on up to one target creature. Like, there's games where you go two drop, three drop, Render Speechless, take the only removal spell they had in their hand, and then kill them with your 4/5 flying owl that surveils one or whatever. Like, there's definitely easy free wins like that as a result of just building your deck like this.
For sure. Killian's Confidence, I'm less high on. That's the white black. I think it's +1/+1, draw a card, and then you can get it back from your yard for an Orzhov if you connect with the opponent. I just think Cost of Brilliance does it better, but I will play Killian's Confidence in my Orzhov decks. Render Speechless is, I wish it exiled because of how much blue spell recursion there is, but Render Speechless is a great, like, bridge to the keep them off balance part of the equation. But that card is just great because it says, what is the big thing you're trying to do? I can maybe grab it, and I'm triggering Repartee, and I'm growing my creatures out of range of removal, and potentially growing them out of range of the creatures you have on board to block, and I'm pushing damage. Like, it's a real multi-way player in that respect.
Yeah, I think Render Speechless is the card of the week for me from playing this past week. I have been absolutely savaged by that card in the few drafts I've done, and I also absolutely got savaged by it in Sealed when I was firing off bullets in the collector booster lottery.
Yeah, Render Speechless is great. So that brings us to the keep them off balance portion of things. And I think this is honestly, I mean, these, once you have your card evals around this stuff, I think drafting these decks when it's appropriate for your seat will be, you know, easy enough to do for a large percentage of our listeners. I think the big edge to be gained is in games. And I think you'll already be keeping the big blue decks somewhat off balance by structuring your picks around. I am not going to be so soft to cheap removal, but, like, let's talk about Essence Scatter. Because I think playing around Essence Scatter, air quotes playing around Essence Scatter, is a big way to keep your opponent off balance. You know, I talked about when, if I'm planning to play a Tome Blast and you play a three toughness creature, that's pretty rough for me. Similarly, if I have decided I'm holding up Essence Scatter, I'm structuring my curve around, I'm not tapping out of Essence Scatter for X number of turns. And if you can pick up on that and nullify it in some way, now I'm not recommending you go, well, they have Essence Scatter, so instead of casting a creature, I won't cast a creature and I'll pass, and that'll show them. No, I don't.
That's a terrible plan. That's what I was going to say.
I'm not recommending that. When I say play around Essence Scatter, I am not saying don't cast a creature spell into open blue mana. But sometimes you might say, let's say you're on the play and you've got a two drop and they play their second land and they pass. And I have a choice between playing a three drop or playing a Cost of Brilliance. I'm going to default. Normally, I would default to affect the board, play the creature first, play my card draw spell later. On balance, if I'm facing Island Mountain and with mana open, I'm probably going to cast Cost of Brilliance on that turn because it has the potential to nullify the Essence Scatter. It also adds pressure to the board. It keeps the gas flowing. Like, it does the things I want to do and potentially plays around Essence Scatter. Now, I'm not going to do that all the time. And again, if I don't have the Cost of Brilliance, I'm playing that three drop into Essence Scatter mana anyway. Other ways you can think about playing around Essence Scatter is, like, okay, on turn five, I could play a four drop. Or maybe I could play a two drop and a two drop, or a two drop and a three drop. And if I think they have Essence Scatter, I might be more inclined to, if I do go the two drop, three drop route, they're going to counter one of these, but I at least get something on the board this turn, which is important, rather than play my four drop, they counter it, that's my whole turn, and they probably got to double spell. That's the way I'm talking about playing around Essence Scatter.
Well, and I also think, too, having a read on the game for the likelihood that you think they have essence scatter, because you can definitely start to get a feel for it versus your position in the game. Like, there's some amount of equity too in knowing on turn five, well, I've got this five drop that's going to be very game impacting. And I've got maybe one of the ways you're talking about, I've got a cost of brilliance plus a two drop or something. And like, just knowing your position in the game, because sometimes you just have to go for the five drop and hope they don't have it. Like, if you're in a poor position too, like there's both sides of the equation, I think, with Essence Scatter. Yes.
Well, and I think that there are other things like that, like Rundown. That's the blue top or bottom spell, right?
Or correct.
Run aground, run somewhere.
Run aground.
You're going to go to the tapes and find out for me. But
run behind.
Run in front, run behind, run downstairs, upstairs. Okay, run behind is the top or bottom spell that costs a mana cheaper. And you can sometimes get the read. Like, I've done this before where I'm like, I know you want to run behind my creatures. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to attack. Like, you've left up 3 mana, not 4 mana, and you're going to try and run behind. That doesn't mean I'm not attacking with everything, but maybe I won't attack with my token. Or maybe I don't attack with my 5/5 menace scolding administrator because it's going to lose all its counters. Like, if I can, and you have to have the read, as you're saying, on the game to be like, can I even afford to make this sort of, I think you have this, and so I will respond by this. Like, is it absolutely backbreaking? One, if they don't have it, if your read is bad. Two, is it backbreaking? Can you even afford to play around this thing? But if those are true, that's the kind of thing where you can really be like, okay, I see that your plan is to do this, and I am going to respond. I'm going to preemptively respond by deciding to hold back my token as an attacker this turn.
Who was it? LR had a guest. It was like a very old school Magic player. Oh man, I don't know his name though. This is going to be a terrible story. But he was talking about the whole thing with him as a guest was like, we're at war here. And like, if I feel like you've set me up for this thing to be advantageous for me, I'm not going to do that thing. Like, I'm going to be very contrarian, and whatever I feel like you want me to do,
yes,
I'm going to do this other thing. But I can't remember his name. Chris something, maybe? that's horrible.
This is very good advice, though. Like, that's a really good, like, you have those feelings sometimes. And I know everyone has had these feelings because you more often than not, I feel like, have to actually play into it. Like, as much as every fiber, I'm like, why would you do this? Why are you attacking your 2/2 into my 4/4? Like, what possible reason could you have to do that? But so often we're like, I guess I block. And it almost never works out well for you when you say, I guess I block. But the times where you can be like, okay, you want me to do this. Can I afford to not do it? If the answer is yes, great. And if you can also glean why they're wanting you to do it, then that's even bonus points, because you get to be like, okay, now I've divined what this one card in your hand is, and I will use that as information for future turns. I think being able to keep them off balance in other senses is thinking about those big turns, like whether it's casting the wisdom spell, tapping out on turn 7 for that. Sometimes it's even just maybe it's them casting Quick Study on turn 3 or Embrace the Paradox on turn 5, but whatever they're like, this is my big advantage play that doesn't actually affect the board is, if you can be able to respond to that, if you can just even know that kind of turn is likely coming down the pipe based on them playing this deck, if you can know that and be able to set up some kind of big punishing swing, something like a prepared spell from Quillblade Laureate, that's the double striker that gives +++ and double strike, or Kirol, that gives +2/+2 and trample. If you can sort of either have those on board as like a, hey, are you gonna tap out big time? Then I get to do this. Or better yet, if you can like sandbag, if you're holding Quillblade Laureate and you're like waiting for that turn to happen, and then you go, okay, well now you're gonna be dealing with 10 damage coming at you because of double strike. Those are ways to keep them off balance, because they're so far behind that even that big burst spell, they're too far behind for that value to pull them out of it.
Yeah. And I think as the whatever soup player, those turns feel like well, I just got unlucky that they had this. But you as the Silver Quill player know, no, I knew you were going to do this eventually. And I was waiting for the opportune moment, as it were.
And that's another thing that Rendered Speechless lets you do, right? Is it gives you foresight for that. So not only do you get to grab...
Wait! Oh. Do you like being able to see your opponent's hand? I feel like you always rag on me about this. It's valuable information. Thank you for coming to my side.
Not only do I get to take a card, but I also get to see other cards and know how unlucky I am from their
top. I'm glad you understand. Welcome to my team.
But it really, like, it is, if you have the ability to be like, okay, I'm going to grab your Embrace the Paradox, and then I know you're going to be tapping out for your Quandrix and whatever that cascade is, or maybe that's a bad example. Maybe you take Quandrix and instead you let them cast Embrace the Paradox on turn five, and you know they're going to tap out for that, so then you know the road will be clear for you to do X, Y, Z, whatever. But if you have that ability to go, if you can leverage Rendered Speechless into that 1.5 for 1, 2 for 1 that we're talking about.
2 for 1, baby. 2 for 1. Plus you're getting all those repartee triggers, it's basically a 4 for 1.
Okay, Rendered Speechless, top common.
It's very good, I think.
Hit us up in the DMs.
No cap.
It is very good. It is very good. So I think those are the ways that I have found success the most trying to go toe-to-toe with these decks when I'm not big enough. Because that's the real problem, I feel like. And maybe those are the most demoralizing games, is when, like, I think I'm the big fish and there's a bigger fish.
Yeah.
Those are the worst matchups. And I think these mid-range decks give you a different avenue of attack. And I think the more that soup is contested, the more more knowing how to draft these decks is going to be important.
Yeah, love it.
Shall we I don't know if this putting these things into practice, because this is sort of a compartmentalized way to think about some decks in the format, but can we look at some draft logs?
Please, let's do. I've got one here to kick us off with. Pack one, pick one. You see the following cards as options. There's Alas Gasp in the commons, 1 and a black, instant target creature gets -3/-3 until end of turn. In the uncommons, there's a Molten Note, that's the red, white, X, deals damage to target creature equal to the amount of mana spent to cast this spell. You untap all creatures you control, and it's got flashback for 8. There's End the Hunt, 1 and a black, sorcery, target opponent exiles a creature of planeswalker they control with the greatest mana value. There's a Disdainful Stroke chillin', 1 and a blue, instant counter target spell with mana value 4 or greater. And then in the rare slot, there's Traumatic Critique, blue, red, X, instant, deals X damage to any target, draw 2 cards, discard a card.
I think this is a pretty clear Traumatic Critique, but I would be curious. I mean, it's not that interesting because the power level I think is low enough, but I'm curious. If Traumatic Critique is a blank, what is the card you're taking out of this pack?
Ooh.
It doesn't ultimately matter. Like, that's the thing about these kinds of picks, is that you're like, well, I'll take whatever, but this isn't dictating anything in any respect for the rest of the draft.
I still think I'm on dodging black, so I don't love Last Gasp or End the Hunt. I think I would be starting with either Disdainful Stroke or Molten Note, and I think Molten Note is fairly a dime a dozen compared to other removal spells, that I think I would land on Disdainful Stroke as the most unique card, but I don't love starting my draft with a Disdainful Stroke.
But the thing about Disdainful Stroke, and I agree, I think I like it the best, Disdainful Stroke is insane in the late game mirrors.
It is, but it's also such a liability against the Lorehold Silverquill decks.
Correct. Yes, it is. And it's weird that, like, Last Gasp and End of the Hunt, like, I almost like Last Gasp better just because it triggers Repartee, but maybe that's wrong.
No, I think Last Gasp better than End of the Hunt. I agree.
But great. So Traumatic Critique in the pile.
In the pile, pack one, pick two, we get a gift. There is nothing in consideration here but the rare, which is Antiquities on the Loose, 1 white-white sorcery. Create 2/2/2 red and white spirit creature tokens, and then you can flash it back for 4 white-white. And when it's flashback, you put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control, or each spirit you control, excuse me.
Just one of the many broken white rares in this format.
It's a lot of good white rares, yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. For pack context, there's like an Unsubtle Mockery. There's a Send in the Pests. Nothing else great. There's a Grapple with Death, but you're slamming Antiquities on the Loose.
For sure.
Okay. Pack one, pick three.
Coming.
The hits keep coming. Yeah. We get, again, I think the only card in consideration is Scheming Silver Tongue. 1 and a black, 1/3 flying lifelink. At the beginning of your second main phase, if you gain 2 or more life this turn, it becomes prepared. And then you can sign in blood for black, black to have target player draw two cards and lose two life. This is exactly the kind of card that we're talking about from this strategy, right? It's a very efficient creature. It's going to help you keep the gas flowing. Premium.
Well, and like, where, like, my God, cost of brilliance, dump the counter on this, and now you're getting a sign in blood every turn if you want. And worth noting, doesn't come up very often, but worth noting that both sign in blood and sign in blood from this, less important, but cost of brilliance can target your opponent.
Yeah,
so you can use it.
Get that blue deck that got greedy down to their last two cards, get them good.
Sure. Well, or get the last 2 points of damage in as well. But yeah, Scheming Silvertongue is awesome here.
For pack context, there is a Transcendent Archaic Chillin. That's the 7-mana 6-6 Vigilance that whenever it enters, you draw X, where X is the amount of colors of mana. And then if you draw one or more cards, you have to discard two. There's also a Poisoner's Apprentice, the 2 and a black 2-2 with Infusion. Whenever it enters, target creature and opponent controls gets -4/-4 until end of turn if you gained that life. So we're slamming Scheming Silvertongue.
For sure. And I think... Well, I think worth noting also with pack context, because I am clocking this, and if our listeners aren't, I think it's important to do so. There's an Inkling Mascot and a black-white dual land in the pack. We've just picked up Antiquities on the Loose. We're picking up a Scheming Silvertongue. I would be thinking that Silverquill is a path I could go down with this, with these two rares being passed. And I would be hoping that one of those two cards wheels. And I would also be noting if they don't wheel.
For sure. And we're also just in a very powerful position in the draft in general. We could be playing Jeskai with Antiquities on the Loose. We could be playing Silverquill. We could be pivoting to straight Lorehold. Antiquities is just a very powerful card that gives us a lot of options down the road.
Could also be Lorehold, yeah, Lorehold Splash, Traumatic Critique instead of full Jeskai. Yes, lots of options here.
So we're moving on to pack one, pick four, and it's kind of decision time that gets put to the test quickly. This is where the draft starts to get interesting.
Yeah.
So see the following cards as options. There's a Wilt in the Heat, 2 red-white for the deal 5, then exile whatever died. Cost 2 less to cast if a card left your graveyard. There's also a Stirring Honoromancer, shouted out in the episode earlier. 2 and white-black Orzhov for a 4/5. When it enters, look at the top X, where X is the number of creatures you control, and then you put one of those cards into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. And there's also Kirol, History Buff, red white for the 2/3. When one or more cards leave your graveyard, it becomes prepared. And then you can pack a punch for 1 red-white, mill a card, and put 2+1/+1 counters on a creature and give it trample.
This week, I discovered that this doesn't become prepared. You know, something like, what's it called? The blood letter. That's not what it's called, but the leech guy, the mono black thing that becomes prepared when you gain life for the, that only becomes prepared when you gain life for the first time each turn. So, or it can only become prepared once a turn. So it has the bloodletting thing of then its prepared spell is single black, they lose 2 life. Kirol can become prepared as many times in a turn as you want. And I don't
much
know
if you got mana for.
I don't know if you've had the chance to pop off with Kirol like that, but I have, and it is powerful to just be like, oh cool, here's 2 creatures that gain trample and get 2 counters on them because I, you know, it was prepared and then I got to activate my, you know, whatever, converge 6-drop to bottom a card from my graveyard, whatever. Like, Kirol's really good. This is tough. This is a tough pick. You are very right that this is decision time between, for me, Wilt in the Heat is not in consideration over Kirol. I would take Kirol or Stirring Honoromancer. Gosh, I guess you're supposed to take Honoromancer just because Scheming's, you really want to play Silvertongue if possible.
We really want to play Silverquill. Like, our best path forward is to play Silverquill.
I agree.
Ugh. There's a world where you can make a case, though, that Honoromancer is, like, lower powered whatever than Kirol is for Lorehold. Like, Kirol's a better card for Lorehold than Honoromancer is for Silverquill.
But then
the counter argument is that, like, shipping Honoromancer when you want to be Silverquill sends a pretty bad signal.
Well, yes, sure. You should not pass Honoromancer if you want to be Silverquill, which we probably do. I just think, I'm like, Kirol's the best card in the pack. I should just take the best card in the pack.
I think you can make a case for that. This is a really hard pick. Yeah. I wasn't sure what was right.
It's a hard pick. I also don't know what's right. You landed on Honoromancer. I'm fine to see that and move forward with that in the pile.
So immediately relieved after that. So pack one, pick 5. After taking the Honoromancer, we see a pack with largely nothing and a Silver Quill charm hanging out. That's white black for the instant. Choose one, put 2/+/+1 counters on a creature, exile target creature power 2 or less, or each opponent loses 3 life and you gain 3 life. Next best card is like a Spell Pierce or something like that.
The next best card is Terramorphic Expanse.
Sure. I don't know. Spell Pierce has gotten me good in this format.
You and Conditional Counter Magic name a more iconic duo. Okay.
So we slam the Silver Quill charm there. Yeah. Easy pick. But then, no, it gets less easy again. So pack one, pick 6. Ooh. See the following cards as options. There's a white-black duel. There's another Wilt in the Heat. And there's another Kirill hanging out here, along with no white cards, no black cards, and no Silver Quill cards.
Wow. This is really tough. Because I really want to take the land.
Do you? That seems aggressive to me.
I mean, I don't know what percentage you think you're moving off of Silver Quill at this point. Seems low. But it's possible, but seems low. And Kirill plus Wilt in the Heat is... Like, if it was just Kirill, I'd feel less... If it was just Kirill in the pack, I would feel more confident about taking the land. The fact that it's Kirill and Wilt in the Heat in the pack makes me less confident in taking the land and feels more likely that this is a lore hold signal.
Oh, and this is now like 2 packs in the last 3 packs that have had a Kirill and a Wilt in the Heat in the signal packs. Like 4 through 8 are the big signal packs. And pick 4, we've had giant lore hold signal, and pick 6, we've had a giant lore hold signal.
I know, but I just love lands. I love taking lands.
Sure, but like the reward for finding Lorehold being more open than Silver Quill is much higher than the reward for having a good mana pace in contested Silver Quill.
I agree. I'm just noting my desires and I think also just trying to highlight a point that I am consistently wanting to hit home, which is just I want to take lands once I know what my college is, and we're still figuring it out, so I think it's not appropriate. But like once I know, I want 2 to 3 duels in my color pair if possible, just because of the plethora of like A, B, 2 drops that are in those color pairs. But yeah, I like taking Kirill here. I think it's right.
Well, and I think it would maybe be less right if Antiquities on the Loose weren't so absolutely broken. Do you know what I mean? Like if Antiquities on the Loose is a B level card.
If you didn't feel like I could lose all 3 black cards and still be good.
Yeah.
Then it would feel less. That tracks for sure. The problem is that most of white rares are that.
Sure. So we took the Kirill here, specced on Lorehold, and then pack 1, pick 7, see the following cards as options. The only things in consideration are an Expressive Fire Dancer or a Stone Docent. And again, I think this is an interesting pick in that Fire Dancer is a significantly better card in my mind than Stone Docent. But Stone Docent keeps you open to both Silver Quill and Lorehold. It's close. Well,
and Docent, I think Fire Dancer is going to be better in red-blue than red-white. And Stone Docent, I actually like taking Docent here. It's a spirit for your Antiquities, and it's a leave the graveyard for Kirill.
I agree. I think I missed this pick. I think I should have taken Stone Docent here. I did take Expressive Fire Dancer, and I think that was a wrong pick. I think Docent is the right pick in hindsight.
Oh, interesting. All right.
Pack 1, pick 8. See the following cards as options. This is another interesting pick here, I think, in that we've got 3 options. There's a Wander Off, 3 in a black instant exile target creature as the best card in the pack. There's Rehearsed Debater, 2 in a white, 3/3 Vigi with Repartee. It's +1/+1 until end of turn. And then there's also Living History, 1 in a red, enters, make a 2/2 spirit. And whenever you attack, if a card left your graveyard this turn, target attacking creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn.
Living History is a really interesting card because it is on face like a very good aggressive card or whatever, a very good lore hold card, but it doesn't actually slot in to the outline of mid-range decks that we talked about today.
I agree.
And so would I cut Living History from my lore hold deck? Probably not, but I'm not inclined to take it very highly. I think I would take Wander Off here if it were me.
Is there a world where you feel like well, Silverquill hasn't seemed open, or I want to continue to toe the line between Silverquill and Laurel. That's where I was here, because I think that this pick is interesting. You either take Rehearsed Debater to give yourself the option to continue to toe the line, or you take Wander off and you start to narrow in on Silverquill.
I'm just really trying as hard as I can, picks 1 through 8, to not take toe the line picks. I'm just trying to take the best card out of each pack. And I think bonus point, like Rehearsed Debater is just going to be middling, as I think, in Lorehold or Silverquill. It feels dime a dozen. I should get that. I should get Owlin Historian, like whatever medium 3-drop creature I want for my deck, I should be able to get. And if I end up Lorehold and I take Wander off here, it's fine. But if I end up Lorehold, I shouldn't miss Rehearsed Debater, I don't think.
That's fair. I think I'm too high on Rehearsed Debater, I think, in reflection on this conversation. Like, I should be equally happy with a Debater or an Owlin Historian. And yeah. I think Rehearsed Debater is a lot better, but I don't think it actually is that much better. If it is better at all. So yeah, you're selling me. I took Rehearsed Debater. I think you're selling me that Wander off is the correct pick. Pack 1, pick 9. Ding, 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 ding.
What's the ding? Ding, ding.
You, Cost of Brilliance. I was setting you up. I thought you were gonna slam it home.
Well, but it did. But I already peeked ahead. I cheated, and I noticed that in pick 11, I didn't even shout this out, knowing this was going to happen. But neither Inkling Mascot nor the Black White Dual Land wield.
Yeah, that's not a great feeling. Not wielding
that makes
Inkling
me
Mascot.
Really nervous that Silverquill is the right place for us to be.
Yeah. So you end pack 1. Be like, could be either still.
Well, not really. I mean, you could be in the sense of like anything is possible, but if you drop black, you are cutting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards, and a lot of those are some of your better cards. Like, that leaves you with Antiquities on the Loose and Kirol if you end up going red white.
Yeah,
it's not great.
I mean, and Fire Dancer.
And Fire Dancer. But I mean, like,
you got some 3-drops, you got some premium 3-drops and Rehearsed Debaters.
But spoiler, I see that's where you end up. And I think it's, I have to imagine it's right, given, like, all I need to see is that pick 11, that Mascot and the land don't wheel.
Well, and here's why. Pack 2, pick 1's kind of middling. I think I, again, made a wrong pick here. I took Burst Lightning over Primary Research, and I think I should have taken Primary Research, probably, but that's close, and I wasn't necessarily doing the Lorehold leaves the graveyard thing, but pack 2, pick 2, I get past Lorehold and Historian, and that's how I end up getting cemented into Lorehold. Between the Silverquill cards not wheeling, and then getting this pack 2, pick 2 Lorehold, that was enough for me to say, well, I felt like I read the signals even though they were kind of muddy, Lorehold was more open in pack 1 than Silverquill was, and I got this giant dragon that got passed to me.
Nice. And I got a couple of group projects to go with your Antiquities on the Loose. Pump up all those spirits. Nice. Let's do one more draft log here, this second one in our doc, I believe. Yeah, that's the one I wanted to. So pack 1, pick 1. This is a best of 3 draft. Pack 1, pick 1. It's a pretty weak pack. Best common is Rebel Rouser, 2 and a red, 1/4. When it enters, discard a card. If you do, draw a card and tap to exile to add red and deal damage to your opponent. In the uncommons, there's a Rapturous Moment, the 4 blue red, draw 3, discard 2, add blue, blue, red, red, red. Old Growth Educator, 2 black, green for a 4/4 Vigi Reach infusion, enters with 2 counters on it. 3 rares in the pack. Suspend Aggression, 1 red, white, instant, exile target, non-land, permanent, and the top card of your library. For each of those cards, its owner may play it until the end of their next turn. Geometers, Arthropod, green, blue for a 1/4. Whenever you cast a spell with X, then you look at the top X cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And a Mystical Archive card, Triumph of the Hordes. 2GG for a sorcery. Until end of turn, creatures you control get +1/+1 and gain trample and infect. What do you like here?
I hate this kind of card. I'm surprised to see you take it. This is like overrun. And it's not like that much of an overrun plus.
No, it's actually as Neo MTG Mark, who does the set reviews with Limited Level Ups, pointed out to me in chat, like halfway through the draft, he was like, if you don't kill them with this card, it's fog. You fog yourself. Because it doesn't give them what was the thing? Blight.
Yeah.
Blight from one dealt damage and infect.
This is just poison counters.
Poison.
This card is so bad, right?
It's terrible. I'm sorry.
That's what I was thinking. I read this and I was like, I saw that you selected it and I was like, this is odd. Ethan hates this type of card. And then I was thinking about it more and I was like, I also was like, wait a second. This is extremely bad.
It's extremely bad. I agree. I did a bad job. So I took this card. So what are you supposed to take out of this pack? This pack is terrible.
Geomancer's Arthropod, I think, is what you're supposed to take.
Green, blue, 1/4. Wow. Okay.
1/4 is a big butt. You can block some of the early stuff. You're maybe going to get some card advantage.
You're playing X spells. Yeah. All right. So I tell you, so you take Arthropod. Let's say Arthropod is the pick. I don't think that will change the direction of this draft. Pack one, pick two. Some heavy hitters here. Tone Blast is here, but I have eyes for two cards. Snarl Song, 5 energy, converge, fractals, and gain life. And another Mystical Archive card, Cyclonic Rift. 1 and a blue instant, return target non-land permanent you don't control to his owner's hand. And it has overload for 6 and a blue.
That card's nuts, right? I drafted it once, and I never got to cast it. I was so salty.
Yeah, Cyclonic Rift is nuts. It did not feel good to pass Snarl Song, but I think you're supposed to. I think Cyclonic Rift is incredible.
That's my assumption, but I never got to actually cast it.
I won't spoil, but I took it here. I did get to cast it. pack one, pick three. No commons. There's a Quandrix Charm. I think the weakest of the charms by a lot. Maybe Lorehold Charm.
I've played with it more this week, and the Quench mode is really strong.
Yeah, Quench is good. There's a Kirol, History buff. There's a Pest Brood Sloth, the 3 and a green 4/4 reach. When it dies, you make 2/1/1 pests. There's Shared Roots, but you're never taking that over Sloth, I don't think. And there's a Garrison Excavator, the 3 and a red 3/4 menace. When a card leaves your yard, you make a 2/2 spirit.
Yeah, this is not a great pack. I think Sloth is the best card, and you take it here.
I agree. Pack one, pick four. There is what? Unsubtle Mockery and Wander Off are the best cards in the pack. I guess there's Run Behind in blue. There's Sleight of Hand from the Mystical Archive. I guess if we have Geometer's Arthropod, there's a Terra Fractal as an X spell.
That's too big of a hit in power, but maybe you're interested in that on the wheel.
Yeah.
I kind of like delaying the decision here and just taking Sleight of Hand. Or Sleight of Hand.
Yeah.
Yikes. That went way back to my childhood. There's a card called Sleight. It's Sleight is the correct pronunciation, yeah?
Correct.
So it was Sleight of Mind. It was the card from my childhood, and I always said Slate of Mind, and my brothers would endlessly bag on me about calling it Slate of Mind.
And and now you've said it for thousands of people.
There you go.
So here we go. Because of like a reindeer's sleigh, like Santa's sleigh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was my inclination. I had sort of missed that Unsubtle Mockery was here. I think Unsubtle Mockery is just the best card, and we've got inroads to Teemer, Soup, whatever. I think those inclinations for delaying the decision are wrong in this format.
Except Unsubtle Mockery and Wander Off aren't that good. How are you wanting to take Bombard and I'm not? What's happening here?
Unsubtle Mockery is good.
I agree. I love a Bombard, but it's so dime a dozen, it feels like.
But what is Sleight of Hand doing for you?
Helping me find my Cyclonic Rift more consistently.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think it's close-ish. I every time I feel like I'll just get deeper into blue, I like a warning sign goes off for me. Like you're not like I just don't think that's how you're supposed to draft this format.
Well, except I don't feel like Unsubtle Mockery is good enough to branch into a new color. Like there's nothing in this pack. What Unsubtle Mockery and Wander Off are to me are replacement level. in this format. Like, they're at the bar of like, I'm happy to play this, but I don't really care if it's in my deck or not. Or I'm going to be able to get other copies of this type of effect.
Yeah, it's a replace. So it's tough. Like, but you're not guaranteed to get them. That's the sort of thing is like, I want a catch-all removal spell in my black decks. I want an Unsubtle Mockery in my red decks.
I guess. This just feels like we're signing up to play soup before we need to sign up to play soup.
Cyclonic Rift isn't enough of a reason?
I'm real nervous about that after passing Snarl Song. Like,
yeah,
we could just be Quandrix. And I certainly think if we had the Arthropod, it makes me even more want to take
Sleight
of Hand, because then we could just be like a very good dedicated Quandrix deck.
You did it. You said
it. Did I do it again?
We all heard it. Go to the tapes.
Yikes.
All right. Pack one, pick five. How do I end up where I end up? This is so interesting. Pack one, pick five. Another really weak pack.
How did I end up where I end up?
I'm just like waiting for the shoe to drop, and I don't know when it happens, but I must be in pack two, so we probably can't get there. Pack one, pick five. There's a Studious First Year. There's a Heated Argument. The 4 and a red deal 6. Exile a card, deal 2 to that creature's controller. A card that I can't believe I'm just like sort of feel like is a total nothing burger when I was so high on it was Campus Composer.
Yeah, three and a blue, total nothing burger.
That's crazy.
But I don't love our spot here. Like, we're taking Studious First Year.
I agree.
But we're like, and we're set up for soup without any reason to be soup, really.
No payoffs yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pick six, you end up with a Disdainful Stroke.
Again, that same feeling I had is intensifying right now. Yeah. I don't like where we're at.
So pack one ends really bad. And I'm trying to figure out, because I end up in Witherbloom in this draft. I'm trying to figure out how that happens. Oh, I get past. I must have just been trying to cook. I took a Cauldron of Essence. Because I was having that feeling. And pack two, pick one doesn't really give me much. And then pack two, pick two, there's a Flow State. Which I think I was streaming this and chat was like, oh, great, Flow State. I was like, what am I doing? Like,
yeah.
I'm like spinning all these wheels with my blue cards. I don't do anything once these wheels are spun. I just get into Witherbloom. Took Cauldron of Essence, and then pick four, I get an Essence Knit Scholar, the 3/1 with a Pest, and then a Sloth, and then some Bogwater Lumerets. And Witherbloom is open.
Except you don't wheel the Teacher's Past, which is nuts with the Cauldron.
Yeah, it is nuts with the Cauldron. But so is Essence Knit Scholar.
Oh, and then you open Blech.
I open Blech. Oh,
it's good to be good. Trying to feel something, and you're rewarded for trying to feel something.
I was. I mean, yeah, so I ended up Black-Green splashing the Cyclonic Rift in this deck. And did Trophy, though. It was a grind. A grind.
Did you Triumph of the Hordes anyone out?
Did I Triumph? No, I did not run Triumph of the Hordes. Once I realized that it was fog yourself unless you kill them, I was a little less excited about the prospect. So that's that.
That is that.
Those drafts are fun. The drafts where you try and figure it out, and then you do, and you're rewarded for finding the lane. That's the best that this format has to offer, I think.
Well, and I think the warning signs that both you and I were feeling about, I think that is one of the worst feeling drafts you can have in the format of like, well, I started down wanting to be soup, and I didn't have a reason to be soup, but yet I'm pressing onwards trying to be soup. I think those are some of the worst drafts, like, as in terms of like, you are going to 0-3 or 1-3 like very quickly. I've got major trauma, major warning signs from like the first 8 picks of that draft.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the Disdainful Stroke, where you're like, well, I'm taking this Disdainful Stroke, but I feel horrible about it. If you're feeling those feelings, abandon ship.
Yeah. When I see why, because you end up in soup a lot, why you like the Transcendent Archaic so much. and why you were talking about last week of like, I just want to get my top end locked up, is because you can have the reverse feels so bad where you're like, I got all the early game secured, I got all my card draw secured. What is this leading to? Am I going to get something worth delaying the game for? And you're not guaranteed that.
You're not guaranteed that. You can figure out like the bottom end, and the bottom end can be kind of suspect. That's okay. But the reverse where you have great bottom end and like suspect top end, that is a disaster scenario.
For sure.
For me.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlog, our Twitch streams, our YouTube channel, our Patreon page, our merch, any or all of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.